I'm stoked for the game.
Well,
of course you are.
Well.
We don't need no masthead. We don't need no rules. Cause we're just talking about sports like a bunch of crazy ass fools.
All right, welcome again to another edition of Masthead Free Pod. I am your host, Todd, that makes me cry, J2 on the Twitter machine. And tonight we have a little something different for you. First, we still have Bricks.
Hey, guys. Still here.
We have Milwaukee's own Vin.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
And A1 still is off trying to be a professional doctor or something. So we went into the reserves. And we got Justin Bieber. Welcome to the pod, Justin.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thanks for having me. Just egged a house or two, you know. It's great to be here.
All right. So before we get started, let's all raise our glasses in tribute to we only got three more matches left till the season's over, and then we can finally welcome Louis Van Gaal to the Tottenham bench to coach the team. Why aren't you guys raising your glasses?
Good.
I don't think
he's coming to Spurs.
Why not? Why wouldn't he come to Spurs? They're the greatest team in the whole wide world.
Did you check Twitter today there, man?
I've been like out of the loop for like all weekend. Hold on, Manchester United did what? Fuckers!
You know.
Oh, my.
Sometimes three games left in the season. They couldn't have waited.
You've got to be shitting me. Why is the world conspiring against Spurs? Like, we had an easy weekend, we beat Fulham 3-1, and now our manager got poached again. What the fuck?
Always the victim.
Oh, ooh.
Ooh.
Well, just look at it like this, you know. We're going to get the man we should have gotten in the first place, David Moyes.
Yeah, you know, stodgy, you know, tactical football. It's going to be...
Yeah. Go ahead, Vin.
Levy can finally make up for his mistake. That's all.
He's really the redhead that we always deserved on our sidelines. Scott Parker. I think there was a Portuguese dude that had red hair that, you know, maybe wasn't good enough. I don't know.
You know, everybody's been bitching about not having any defensive midfielders, but that's all we're going to play under the like 12 defensive midfielders and five defenders and one keeper.
You know what? Why don't we just keep Tim Sherwood?
Oh.
Fuck that.
Well, yeah, I think we have a lot of reasons why we shouldn't keep Tim Sherwood. And if we get into the Fulham recap, we can probably start to talk about that. So you know I'm now hijacking the David Moyes, the Spurs train. And I'm going to put us on the road to the Fulham recap.
Let's talk about Fulham before we talk about our future Tottenham manager, David the chosen one, Moyes.
This was basically the Sunderland match in redo. We just didn't score 5 goals, and it wasn't as depressing for some reason because I don't know why it wasn't depressing. Like I didn't have a really great time watching Spurs beat Sunderland. I felt like it was
maybe it was just because it was boring.
Yeah, we were winning and it was fun like in that way, but it felt like we were kicking a half dead dog for some reason. It didn't feel that way this time. But it was the same old shit of like 30 minutes, nothing really going on. This time we actually got a goal from a set piece, but then we shipped one right back. So it still ended up at like 1-1 after a certain amount of time. And then we started to play a little bit better. And obviously second half we got better, but I wouldn't say like there was any kind of standout performance other than maybe, Harry Kane, where I would look at it like, man, they just dominated this match. I would say that Lennon looked a little bit better than he had in recent matches, and I was happy about that. He made some nice plays. He actually caught an assist. He looked a lot better. That's fair.
He was fabulous. He took a couple shots that he wouldn't normally take, and they obviously didn't go in, and one of them, you know, was on a bounce and was skied. But I just thought Aaron Lennon had probably his best game of the season against Fulham.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Lennon was really impressive. And Harry Kane just keeps continuing to get better and better. every so match. Good. And I'd really like to see him and Soldado get a little bit of time together, as opposed to Adebayor and Kane, just to see what happens, because he might work. If it was Eriksen, Soldado, and Kane, it might be a little bit better. But I still don't understand. This game just looked like any other game we've played under Sherwood. You know, we had the better quality players. We got better quality chances. We put them away, but we weren't punishing. We didn't look like we had a clue really attacking or defensively. It was just like same old, same old. We were just better than Fulham on the day. I mean, Rodiega could have easily scored two goals. He should have scored two.
Well, I think it's because Hugo decided that he actually was like, fuck this. Somebody's going to buy me this summer. Might as well start putting in some good shifts to up my value so people can come in for me.
Well, I think basically everyone on that team, and as fans, we should just be like, thank you, based God, for giving us Hugo Lloris and Christian Eriksen, because that's it. That's why we won that game. That's why we've still been so good over the last five games or whatever.
I agree with that. That save that he made on Rodiega. Rodiega, how far away did he head that ball? That was like a 20-yard...
Inside the six. Inside the six, for sure.
On the header?
No. The one where he gave Hugo props, I think that was like just inside the 18. But okay. It was a bullet.
Yeah, it was like...
It was straight on, but it was hit really hard.
Because you don't really usually see a keeper have to make that kind of save on a header from that distance. And like, that had some serious pace on it. I think somebody said on Match of the Day, they're like, well, you know, he probably always had a cover. That's probably an easy save for him. And he wasn't saying it was an easy save. He's just saying, like, that's the class of Lloris, that he made that look relatively easy. And I think sometimes that we do take that for granted. And there are a lot of good keepers in the Premier League, but Hugo's really something special. And, you know, he did get knocked out earlier this year, and he didn't always look super comfortable after that. But I think he's starting to get his swagger back, and I'm happy about that, because... and I think it was on Match of the Day, too, they were talking about it. Or, like, right after the match, they said, you know, all good teams need a good keeper. And Spurs have a good keeper. We just need to solidify some of the other things that we have going on around us. So I was happy to see that. But I'm going to ask a question again about Lennon. Because he crossed that ball in. And do you guys remember anything special about that cross?
Oh, it was with his left foot.
Yeah, it was with his left foot. And he usually doesn't do that. And do you guys remember when he played that little through ball into Harry Kane?
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys remember which way he was moving? He was moving to his left.
He was moving to the left.
I don't know if that's, you know, maybe something that he got away from for some time, but I noticed at a certain point, Lennon really wasn't dropping his shoulder and beating people to the line anymore to get in crosses, and maybe it was because he hadn't been willing enough. Maybe if he's lost a little half step, he has to be maybe willing to go to his left a little bit more as he gets older and loses some pace. I don't know what you guys think about that, but it was something that I was happy to see. Also, I had to remember that we're playing Fulham, so I couldn't get too happy. So,
yeah, we were playing Fulham without their best player, Lewis Hopi.
Oh, God. Can we just get through one podcast without Lewis Hopi?
Talking about Fulham, though, just as an aside, they look like a way better team now, though, than they ever did under Yol or Muhlenstein. Like, earlier on, it seems like McGath, as much as everyone gives him a hard time for being a taskmaster or whatever, he has them playing and kind of caring again. Because I remember watching Fulham games earlier on, just coming across, and it didn't really look like they could be bothered to give a shit for Yol. Whereas McGath seems to have his players, like, Fulham might stay up and might actually end up all right.
Well, I think it's safe to say, if we're going to talk about, let's just move a little bit along, because there's not really much to talk about with the Fulham match. Like, it was not that great of a match. But I think there's, like, who's going to get relegated this year? Because, you know, Sunderland got a crazy result. They beat Chelsea. you know, Fulham actually look like a competent team. Norwich is, like, nosediving, and they have a killer run-in. Cardiff is Cardiff. Like, who's going to go down, and who can we poach off of them?
I think Cardiff's going down. And the thing is, I think everybody's going to want to talk about getting Stephen Caulker back. But I think somebody said it. There's been a couple of people that have made really good points about Stephen Caulker, is that he's been the one consistent on a really bad defense. Do you really want him back? I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where you always have really nice memories, and you always have really nice things to say about the players that come through your system. It's like, look at like Andros Townsend, how many chances we give that guy, because he's Tottenham to the bone. But when you look at it, what does he actually produce? Well, I don't know. You know, I think, like I said, the big difference here is right now, definitely Harry Kane. Harry Kane's actually putting numbers up on the board. You know, Bentaleb has even gone through some of that fire and brimstone, you know, for different reasons.
Those two are good examples of things that Tom Carroll and maybe even Stephen Cocker can achieve. But I definitely think that Stephen Cocker is, I know that the rumor was that maybe he wants to be starting, but would you rather start for Cardiff in the championship or be playing a pretty solid, you know, a pretty fair amount with Spurs if we're in Europa next year?
Well, but I think the thing is he left, didn't he, because he didn't want to, he wanted first team football right away. So that's the thing. Is he going to come back with that expectation? Is he even going to be a first team player? Like, I almost feel that ship sailed in some respects, you know, like he was a good prospect, put in some good performances, you know, last season, but we sold him, got a profit on it, cut your losses, move on, kind of, because it's hard to know. Like, there's other people say things too, like, I mean, ITK and shit, that's like he had gambling issues or he said stuff about Joe Lewis. I don't know. I just kind of feel like cut your losses, move on, let's go. It sucks that he's gone, but that's football.
Well, he's also he won first team football, wanted to like try to make the England team, and I think he's in his desire to like get first team action, he's now a crappy player. He's been exposed as at his current age. He's a Champions League championship player, and no more than that.
No,
that really sucks.
I don't think so. I think that's pretty unfair. He is 21, right? 21
yeah.
or 22, and he was, you know, the best thing about Cardiff this year, close runner-up with Fraser Campbell, but that's a whole nother story. I think that just because he's getting relegated with the center-back team, somebody's going to see that. Someone's going to keep him in the Champions League. And I do think that depending on the team and what other people they have leaving, like, you know, selling Vertonghen, he might do well. If not with us, with somebody else.
I wouldn't say that he's just like automatically a championship player, but I think that, you know, it's one of those things that you have to consider, like, why was he sold? Because we don't know, like, you know, like Neil Young, our Canadian buddy, alluded to that, you know, there's all this ITK and all these things. We don't really know why he's sold. There's a lot of shit out there. There's a lot of stuff, you know, maybe he couldn't play AVB's high line. You know, we got to remember now that wouldn't be an issue, presumably, for the next manager. You know, the guy's a pretty good player. You know, he has played in the Premier League all year, but that's also a good point to say, like, you know, is he going to slot back in and fit in? I don't know. I think that we were talking about another team that's going to be relegated. I think that Norwich is going to end up getting relegated, and I don't really want any of their players. I don't care if Robert Snodgrass is a decent winger. I don't want him at all.
And then with either Fulham or Fulham, like, we're going to get Lewis Hopi back. So
we're going to get him back anyway.
It's a loan, but I mean,
would anyone take Rodi Ega as our striker solution?
if we're gonna be the relegation scrap, I wouldn't mind taking Rodiega because he seems to always score big goals in the relegation scrap, you know, and it took a couple nice Hugo saves to keep him out against us. But you know, and it's not like he's a really great striker, it just seems like he would always kinda score at the end of the year and he always just kinda be a pest and he would score some of those goals that would kinda lead to him being looked upon as a favorable type player. But I don't think he would be anything but our fourth striker.
Well, you know,
so he only scores goals when against lesser competition and does it just enough to get your hopes up. So he would be a cheaper Adebayor?
I don't know.
Well, you know, if Fulham do get relegated, there's another striker that is still on their roster that I'd rather coach.
Clint Dempsey?
No. Spurs legend, Berbatov.
He's not on Fulham.
Yes,
he's on loan at Monaco. Fulham still own him.
Are you sure about that?
Sold.
Almost 100% positive.
I'm pretty sure you're wrong here.
I know
he was out of contract. He's out of contract this year. He's playing for a contract. He only had 6 months left on his contract.
Ah, shit. He is at... Well, it says that he... Maybe he did get sold to Monaco.
Yeah, he is at Monaco. He
permanently?
Plays there. I'm pretty sure that he got sold.
They signed him. Well, God, Fulham, you deserve to be relegated.
Yeah, see,
you
I was
pieces
gonna,
of shit.
There it is.
I was going to say, like... I was just, you know, for the listeners out there, I knew that he was sold there, but, like, to watch Bricks actually have to go through, like, the emotions of reading about it was worth it to me, and any dead air that we had to actually go through, and they're like, oh, they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. I'm like, nope, I knew.
No, I just wanted to see these things.
Son of a bitch.
I wanted to see it, so. Did you guys see the goal he scored the other day?
Oh, my God.
The sex?
Yeah, it's just...
He's just erotic. Like, hey, that one in. Yes, I am a god. Yes, you are, Demi.
I don't know. I think maybe I'll link in the post this week. Just, I'll mention that we talked about Berbatov, and I'm going to link this article that I read when he went to Man United, where he basically talked about, like, why he doesn't have to really give a shit. And it's, like, one of the best articles. It's so pure Berbatov. He's just kind of like, well, some players, you know, we just don't have to try hard. You know, we can give our effort and not look like we're trying, and we can do what we're supposed to do. And it was just, it's like the best thing I've ever heard. It was so, so, so Berbatov to the bone, but.
I just love that man.
Yeah, anyway.
I think we should move on from Bourbon.
Yeah, that's probably true. And this week, like last week, you know, I think we all pretty much tried to ignore that Tim Sherwood existed, because just to be honest with you, it gets a little annoying, and it's, I don't know about you. What's that?
I kind of like him.
Of course you would. But
catch up with me here, guys. Like, I haven't bothered to really pay attention to what Sherwood said for the last 3 or 4 weeks, because it's just, like, infuriatingly stupid, so
yeah.
I don't bother. I just tune him out at this point, because he's just there, he's holding space, whatever. Just let him do his thing.
And the thing I feel like is most managers are put in place, like, after they fire a manager to kind of be, like, the patsy, right? You know that you're just going to be the guy that's, like, set up and made look stupid so they can bring somebody else in. But, like, Sherwood's fighting it, which I have a little bit of admiration for, but it's, like, he's fighting it to a point where it's just so annoying, and it's, like, just wearing on me, and it's grating on me. To the point where it's, like, but if you can't even pick, like, a proper lineup, I can't respect anything that you're doing. So this week, it's something that we don't often, like, actually name, but, like, one of the memes of the week around Spurs that I really, like talking about was that Sandro wasn't on the bench, and everybody was up in arms about this. And then people started talking about, like, how is Sandro not even good enough to be in your team? Like, he's like, you're playing everybody else out of position. Like, does this guy even know what's going on? So I thought, like, one of the funnier things we could do this week is we could talk about a couple of Spurs legends, and, you know, we all kind of know where they played, and we could just, like, kind of talk, hypothesize about where old Timmy Tactics would line them up if he had the chance to coach some of these greats. So this is going to be a little bit of helter-skelter, and it's going to be funny because none of us have told each other who we're going to pick. But I'm just going to kind of open this one out, and I'm going to ask. I'm going to kind of set him up, put him on the spot, our guest this week. He's the lead singer of Arcade Fire. I don't know if you guys know yet, but we have him on the podcast today, a great Canadian band, big Spurs fan. I'm going to ask him, where does he think that Tactics Timmy would line up our famous Paul Gascoigne, Gaza? Where did he think that Tactics Timmy would line him up?
Well, Total Tim, embracing the full power of the hashtag Total Tim movement, I'd have to think he'd take Gaza, and he'd probably just, you know what, he'd probably stick him on the right or left wing and just kind of let him just be there, you know? Like, I mean, Gaza was a once-in-a-generation kind of mercurial central midfield talent, but Sherwood would just think, you know, well, I'll just put Gaz out on the right and let him whip crosses in. You know, that's fine. Like, he wouldn't really want to take advantage of the fact that, you know, Gascoigne could do a lot of cool, amazing shit. I think Tim would just be like, oh, you know, Paul out here, and we'll let him hit the ball in. And he might treat him a bit like Eriksen, except he probably wouldn't like him as much as Eriksen, because, I don't know, Tim doesn't really like anyone. Yeah. Everyone's much of a muchness.
Yeah, I like that answer. I think you found a nice parallel there, you know. Once-in-a-lifetime talent, you know, great number 10-like skills, and let's just ship them out to a wing, you know. Why do we need to let them have the whole pitch? Let's just kind of confine them, you know. Don't let them roam.
Want some chalk on your feet, boy.
Yeah, get some chalk on your feet, you know, teach you a little discipline out there, you know. Cry. I'm going to ask you about a more recent, and I know one of your favorite players. You know, you love him so much that sometimes you can't even say his name correctly. Where do you think old Tactics Timmy would place Ludley King if he had a chance to coach the great Ludley?
Okay, Leslie King would obviously with good old tactics, Tim. Since Ledley came through the youth system, there's only one place that, you know, any player from the youth system with Tottenham can go under tactics, Tim, and that is up top. He has to be a forward in some capacity. He has to take as many shots on goal, no matter the fact that he can't run, he's got one leg, all that good stuff. He can't hold up play. He runs better. He's better with his back. Since he's so good with his back to the goal, anyway, might as well just be a holding the holding attacker, and we can finally bench Adebayor.
Well, and you know, if you guys remember, I think it was like, I won't say that I was a full-on Spurs fan at this time, but I think it was in 2000. Didn't he score like a 10-second goal against Bradford City or something like that?
Yes.
You know, and there it goes. It goes right into the narrative. You know, tactics Tim sees, you know, sees a 10-second goal. Ledley, I don't care. You know, pedigree, you know, full-time central defender. No, you scored a 10-second goal, son. All right, Bricks. I'm going to try now. All right. I got to go up your wheelhouse here. I got to figure it out. He's a Spurs legend, and I just feel, well, maybe he's not a Spurs legend. I don't know how people feel about this guy, but.
So not Scott Parker.
I feel like you haven't talked about him in a couple weeks, and I just, once again, I kind of want to see how your eyes light up, and then you have to think about, you know, how he's going to be mistreated by tactics Timmy. Where do you think that he, you know, aside from the fact that he's already played Michael Dawson as a central defender this year, where do you think, like, you know, in this hypothetical world where he couldn't play him in his actual spot, where do you think he would play Michael Dawson?
Oh, man. I think our good old tactics to me would actually put him on the left wing. And it's because mostly he's done a lot of things with our left wing that are unique. And he is so concerned about playing the correct people in central, in the center midfield, that he's going to need to have a lot of support, a lot of speed, a lot of pace, a lot of awesome crossing, and, you know, long ball placement on the left wing. So I think that by putting Dawes there, we've solved that defensive issue we have on the left-hand side. I mean, that's what Tim's really very concerned about, our defense on the left side this year. I mean, that's been a huge priority for him. So, yeah. I think that's Dawson starting there every match.
Yeah. I thought you were going to make a penis joke about how we needed an anchor in the midfield. you know.
Oh, my.
So,
I thought she was going to go with, like, he was going to be the guy who was going to hold the loofahs in the shower.
Yeah. I was really ready for a penis anchoring joke there, but
into our ninth episode, and I am still not the person who brings up penis first in every podcast.
Well, you know, we're guys; we can't help it. We're a little bit sexist and we're a little bit disgusting, but we were born this way.
Whoa! I'm not sexist. I love sex.
That's true. Cry was born this way. That's Lady Gaga taught me that.
I don't think you guys are sexist because I think men are better.
I'm pretty sure I'm not better than anybody, but
I think we should go back to tactics, Tim, and not talk about penises.
You could do both.
You guys can ask me a question, and if not, I'll ask myself a question, which is, you know, pretty much my childhood.
The most recent Spurs legend. What do you think? Since he didn't come up through our youth system, and he's a foreigner at that. Do you think the great tactics Tim would put the legendary Gareth Bale?
Where would he put Gareth Bale? I think that he would put Gareth Bale at sweeper keeper, because, you know, when you play that really loose midfield and then you play that high line, you're basically having, like, you know, it's open season on your goal. So he would see that speed. You know, the first time he would see him let out towards goal, he'd be like, "That's beautiful, Gareth. Now we're just going to put you at the back, and we're going to save, you know, we're going to save my face with your speed, and you're just going to clear out all of these balls." So I think that he would make him the prototypical sweeper keeper.
Welsh Beckenbauer.
Yeah, the Welsh Beckenbauer, basically. I think that's what he would see. You know, tactics Tim would be like, "I'm a visionary. I'm going to use my best skilled and my best shooter on the team, and I'm going to put him at the back." Yeah, I mean, it would suck because we'd have to find a new place for Hugo. I love Hugo, but that's where I would see our genius, our football savant, tactics Tim, putting him. And, you know, this all started with me thinking about Cliff Jones, basically. You know, and I was reading up on Cliff Jones, and then I was thinking, like, where would tactics Timmy play Cliff Jones? You know, who's a famous, you know, trophy winning winger from our past. And I was thinking about, you know, the whole Chadley thing. And I was like, fucking tactics team would probably have made, you know, Cliff Jones a holding midfielder. So it started this whole joke in my head of like, you know, all these famous players for Spurs, where they would have actually played. So that's where I was on that.
But I think we know where Ozzy Ardiles and Ricky Villa, the two famous Argentinians, landmark signings, would play for Tim.
Where would they play?
They wouldn't play at all, because just like Eric Lamela, Tim, as we know, much of a muchness. There's no world-class players in this team. Yeah. They'd be hurt, because, I mean, that's Tim's experience, right? And Tim, if we know one thing, he knows character, he knows experience, and that's what he goes off of.
Yeah.
So I think we wouldn't have a Ricky Villa 1981 FA Cup goal. We'd have Ricky Villa sitting on the sidelines, wasting
not
his time.
Not enough grit.
Yeah. Just more Argentinians.
Also, go ahead, also with Tactics Tim, he's such a genius that if Bill Nicholson came in to wanted to offer him his assistance in coaching the team in any shape, form, or fashion, he would just send him off into the reserves. And we would never have, the 60s at all, because Tactics Tim would keep Bill Nicholson chilling in the reserves coaching losers.
Yeah, well, at this point, I'm going to kind of wrap that up. It was a little fun thing to think about. We know that the fun and games eventually always have to end on this podcast, and we have to get down to business. This week, our biggest order of business is coming up in Lame of Two Halves. We had a very, very, very close match last week with Brix and I fighting it out, and it came to my attention that Brix votes for herself twice in every poll. In some serious Serie A match-fixing action. But at the last check, it actually came out in favor of me, the Italian, who chose to keep his honor.
I lost?
You lost. Yeah.
Well, shit.
So I am very much in the driver's seat right now, but it doesn't mean that the season's over. And because A1 is out again, we have a matchup this week of Cry and Brix in a bottom of the table matchup. Cry, as we all know, has yet to pick up a point this year, and I think after that tough loss last week, this is where he can really look to pick that up. You know, Brix might be looking a little shaky on that rebound coming back from that tough match. But now we move into the actual topic. Like I said, up to this point, you know, we talk about, like, Fulham, and we're like, yeah, Fulham really isn't that good. And we talked about, like, stupid tactics, Tim. Where is he going to play all of our players? Yeah, that's like, it's a laugh. It's good fun. But now we're going to talk about some serious stuff. And as any self-respecting Spurs fan knows, the bacon sandwich is sacred to our football club. And the hypothetical this week is that you walk to the fridge when you're about to make a bacon sandwich, and you open it up, and you see in your fridge two choices. Either the Canadian bacon back, or some regular bacon, the belly, and you think to yourself, fuck me, what have I done here today? And you have to ponder which one to use. So coming up first is Cry.
What? No, no. Ladies first. I insist.
Whoa. Ladies first, as dictated by a man, is incredibly sexist. I should just be able to go whenever I want, and I want to go second.
Oh, I like it. Well, it's not usual that in the broadcast booth, the competitors can actually scream at the person and stop the flow of the show. But that's how, you know, committed we are here to getting it right. So up first is Cry.
This is gonna be bullshit.
Who will be talking about the virtues of the regular Birkin sandwich. He's been warming up on the field. Chirpy's been less and less nervous because there's been bacon instead of chicken this week. And he's ready to take the pitch in 3, 2, 1.
The Wright brothers ate bacon before their first flight. Tyson ate bacon before every fight. Jordan's fingers are slick from bacon as he won his 6th ring. Bacon is what helps Adele graciously sing. But it doesn't end there. The impact is far greater. Armstrong ate bacon inside the moon's crater. Through good times and bad, bacon sustains. For our bacon less is great, and we just can't refrain. Medically speaking, its powers are infinite. Did you know polio cure had bacon in it? Some may say bacon, blah, not me, and claim to be happy while still bacon free. To these people we ask, have you not lived? Have you not taken to all what bacon can give?
Well, I know certainly what I am not going to be reading to my child at night when I have a hypothetical little monster. Although it was clever, I would have to say that all these ideas of championships and trophies just being weaved in makes me think that, you know, regular bacon really is something that we should be, you know, integrating once again into the football club, you know, after those days of Harry Redknapp, you know, talking about them. Mike Myers, I'm looking to you now for some instinctive expert analysis.
I have many takes on bacon, but I will say that the bacon from my country, Canadian bacon, is not as good for bacon sandwiches. As a connoisseur of the bacon sandwich, it doesn't do the same thing as that belly bacon.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. It did make me think when Cry was talking about Jordan's greasy fingers that I wonder if, you know, hitting that last jump shot against the Utah Jazz, that if, you know, we would have known that the ball was soaked in grease, if we would have thought about it quite the same way.
Nothing but bacon, baby. Nothing but bacon.
Yeah. But as awe-inspiring as that description of bacon and what it means to us is, we have Brooks coming up second here, and she has the Canadian bacon argument. She's been warming up out on the pitch. Chirpy still looks a little, you know, relaxed, seeing as the discussion's on Canadian bacon coming up here. And she's about to take the pitch in 3, 2, 1.
Back bacon, Canadian bacon, back Canadian bacon. I think it's pretty great. I mean, you put it on a pizza, a real life thin crust West Coast style pizza. Why would you want to put real bacon on the pizza? You can put pineapple on left back. And what do they want to be in center back? Do you not like pineapple? It's all right. But it can be a little sour. It really doesn't belong on pizza. It, out of position from its rightful place in a fruit salad. But who wants a one-dimensional fruit fucking up the team with their foul attitude and their injuries? It's worth selling for certain very overpriced, not great, bruised fruit. I mean, you could really put pineapple into a deep dish pizza if it was actually pizza and if you had a special partnership with a Spanish pizza maker in Spain.
3, 2,
don't let Canadian bacon be timed out. Free Lamella!
Free Lamella. Well, I'd have to say once again that after this discussion on bacon today, that Chris Foy, his linesman, and Sandra Redknapp are all somewhere shedding a tear in honor of this discussion. And I can say that rarely is the topic of bacon given its just due in football, but today we have that.
Bacon wins championships, people.
Yeah. Cry once again.
What are you talking about? I don't
chiming in. Our Canadian friend, do you have any of your hot takes for this segment of A Lamb of Two Halves by Bricks?
Back bacon is fantastic on Eggs Benedict, and it's pretty good with eggs and in breakfast things, but like Hawaiian pizza sucks dick, so any pizza with pineapple on it is garbage. So let's just get that out of the way, even if you put back bacon on it.
Sell back pineapple to Real Madrid.
Emil bacon's good, but if we're talking about the bacon sandwich as the item that Harry Redknapp said that linesman, his wife would make for him, I still think that it's that belly bacon, and it's just that much better. And if you want to take it one step further, you add tomatoes. Not lettuce, tomatoes. Forget the BLT, just go bacon and tomato. It's a whole other world. Lettuce is superfluous. You don't need it.
Whoa.
So there you have it again.
Harsh on the lettuce.
So there you have it again, ladies and gentlemen. No matter how poorly our competitors behave, interrupting their hosts who so thoughtfully plan out the analysis for them, we have an interesting discussion. This week, will it be Cry getting off the schneid and getting his first points, or will it be Bricks taking her horrible, horrible defeat to Vin from last week and getting back in the win column? Stay tuned to see who the winner of A Lamb of Two Halves was from this week. And don't forget that you can have an impact on this outcome. Literally, your vote might cast the winner, as it did this week, where somebody justfully came in and saved me from the Bricks monster of two votes.
You know, so, no, that's not fair, because Martin Atkinson should not be allowed to ref games anymore. He ruins it for me every time.
I'm just that good. So basically, tune in again next week, and we'll see what other ridiculous thing we can argue about on A Lame of Two Halves.
Or if you have a suggestion, feel free to drop it in the comments section.
We won't read them.
But what we will read from the comments section are your questions. Brits.
That's right. I even went to this blog called Cartilage Free Captain. I had never heard of it before, and apparently someone posted mailbag questions. So here's a few of the mailbag questions for our contingency. From our pal, Bermethius, Pritchard turns 21 and returns from his youth loan next week. What are his chances at Spurs, and why? And what is likely his future?
First of all, as Neil Young, I just have a message to pass on to Tim Sherwood here before we get any further. And we were a little bit hard on him, and I apologize for that. I'd just like to tell Tim to remember that only love can break your heart. You know, you were in a helpless situation. Keep that heart of gold and keep on rocking in the free world, Tim. In terms of Pritchard, I think the biggest thing is where does he fit? Think about how many midfielders we have that are central midfielders, right? Especially attacking midfielders, which is where Pritchard plays. He's had a good season in League One, but where does he fit? Who does he displace? Who do we sell? Because, I mean, we've got a glut when he and Carroll are both back. So that's my thing. I don't know where he can go in the team.
Yeah, and I know he can play on the wing too, but you're right. He is basically just like an attacking midfielder. And there's a big difference between League One and the Premier League. He would hypothetically probably have to go out on another loan if we want to like kind of progress him along. Maybe like an Andrew style, like, you know, give him another loan. But at a certain point, you have to say like maybe he just doesn't have the physical tools. And everything that I seem to read says that maybe he doesn't have the physical prowess. You know, he does have a hell of a strike on him, and it seems like he's a crafty player. But I think that a player like Angelo Townsend is probably going to get a little bit more chances than him because he does have that physical robustness. He's able to dribble players, and even though his end product probably, we could say at this point, maybe isn't as finished, isn't as nice as Pritchard's, there's a lot of the other intangibles that are there that they're hoping that stuff will come along.
With a loan for Pritchard, one note, I think he's senior age now. He's 21 or whatever. So I think his next loan, he can't fall under youth loan or however it works. I think there's some difference I remember reading today. So there's some difference now for how he counts against the team. If we keep him, he'll have to be registered as a player. He can't be an under 21 who slides in under. So if we kept him, he takes up a spot on the 25-man squad.
Well, as long as Sherwood's the manager, he'll always have a spot on the 25-man squad roster because Sherwood loves the kids.
Vin, you pointed out that a League One is different than the Premier League. For certain, we all agree, but I'd also like to point out that Fulham is different than the Premier League. And if we are going to be selling Lewis Holtby, as we should, to a championship league lead, a championship side, then we should keep Pritch and see what we can do to continue to develop him and keep him as our back burner option after we sell Holtby.
That's fair. I just don't really see, you know, I think last year I was thinking like, yeah, maybe he'll make a step up, and then they didn't give him that chance. So I think he just kind of moved to the back burner for me a little bit this year.
Does he also count as homegrown? I mean, I know that comes up every now and then, and that's why I think a lot of people were shocked to see Cocker go. But where are we on our numbers with the squad next year? That may make a difference.
Well, if we get rid of Sigurdsson, that'll be one less. So.
What? I quit. Our next question is from Sandro's Hard Tackle, and it says, if handsomeness translates to on-pitch success, who would our next manager be?
Handsomeness. If handsomeness is, you know, the key to success, I'm going to say Orlando Bloom should be the next manager of Tottenham Hotspur.
I would say you need to get your eyes checked.
Yeah.
That's just me.
That's kind of weird.
I kind of do have weird taste in men. Like, I go in between Yunus Kabul and Orlando Bloom. I think I have some, you know, issues to work out there.
Yunus is a good-looking man-ish.
Okay. But how about George Clooney?
No.
Yep. Well, George Clooney, era George Clooney.
So mid-90s George Clooney, mid-90s. If he was the manager.
Okay. Gary Oldman? Oh, my God. Yes.
Commissioner Gordon?
I don't know what that means, but Gary Oldman. Or Mark Ruffalo.
Those are Mark Ruffalo? Mm-hmm. Okay.
But not George Clooney.
Do you guys think that he meant, like, actual football managers?
Does it really matter?
I don't know.
If we're talking actual football managers, I think it's De Boer for me, and then Tuchel as well from Mainz. I think those two would be the actual two who would have the handsomeness that would translate.
That's fair. I think Pochettino, and it's like a Pochettino. Actually, is probably how you would say it, but I don't know, you know, how it gets messed up like that. I think he's underrated. You know, he's got a good little scowl on him. You know, I think he's got some brooding, you know, some brooding talent there.
I'm actually coming around as you're talking.
Yeah, I wouldn't say like, you know, he's a traditional model, but he's kind of got a little charisma to him, and I kind of like him, you know. And he's Argentinian, you know, so he might actually realize that, you know, Lamella might be good.
I'm going to say two people. One, he who must not be named, our savior, Andre Villas-Boas. But number two, Roberto Martinez is a pretty handsome man.
You know what? He is. He actually is a really good-looking guy. Mm-hmm. I think that just because his hairline is in, like, imminent decline for the last couple of years, people maybe, like, sleep on him.
He rocks it. Yeah, and he has such a charming smile.
Yeah, he does own it, and he's just, you know, that confidence of saying, you know. And I think something for me about just, like, that he played attacking football at Wigan. When you play
and
attacking...
Not typical attacking football, either.
Right, but, you know, if you got the balls to do that, you know...
If you have
now,
the balls
I think, now I think we're just talking about which manager we want to date, not like who we want to manage our club. It's just like, if I had to date a manager, who would it be? I think I'd like to date.
Sets you up to answer. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I guess
I was
you
just
know.
Gonna go with
physical things. This is so objective.
I was just gonna go with Alex Morgan should manage Tottenham Hotspurs.
She's handsome.
But
she's
how about handsome. Tottenham Hotspur? Who should manage them?
Sydney.
See.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I'd go with Martinez.
Well, we have another question to kind of piggyback on this recent one. It's from Out Zen. It says, now that Van Gaal is rumored to be out of bounds, who would you ideally want as our next manager? So let's put the Roberto Martinez is a babe aside and think seriously now. Who would you guys want to see managing Spurs?
Well, Martinez would have been my choice back, really, when Redknapp was sacked. I think, in all honesty, he's who I would have wanted, but that ship sailed for now. I think he's not going to leave Everton.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing for me, and this comes from having read a book, The Boys from White Hart Lane. It's by Martin Cloak and Adam Pally, and it's about Spurs in the 80s. It's just a bunch of interviews with different players from that really good cup team that won a bunch of cups. And one of the things that's talked about is kind of the youth progression that existed there with Keith Birkinshaw and Peter Shreve and the two of them, you know. There was really good synergy because you had a lot of star players, the hungry young players coming through too, like Mark Falco and a bunch of other guys like that who came. So for me, I think for what Daniel Levy wants and what we should have, and who knows what Tim Sherwood, you know, before this promotion happened, if he'd been paired with the right person, could have ensured, is that you have a manager who has that focus on youth and bringing them through and having an academy that produces talent. And for me, like, De Boer is the person I'd want for that, just based on his success at Ajax with those things, but Ajax is Ajax, so it doesn't really work here. So I don't really know who I want. Any manager's a gamble, I guess, is my biggest thing.
Yeah, I was going to go with FDB myself, but thinking about it, I think FDB would be a good shout for now, but he'll probably eventually get poached for Barcelona in probably about 3 to 5 years. And then hopefully by that time, we can finally ascend, Ledley King finally ascend to the throne of a White Hart Lane and actually lead Tottenham to glory. I think by that time, if Mr. King or Coach King or Gaffer King, whichever title he wants to go with, by that time, we'll have all his badges and have, like, at least 2 to 3 years under FDB to kind of get his feet under him. He'll at least be able to have the respect of the youth team, because most of the kids by that time will have seen King play and respect him, so they'll get that a good give it a good go for at least for a Tottenham legend. And if we can't get FDB, I think we should just go outside the box and just go pick up Bradley from wherever he's off in Norway.
Bix, who do you want to pick up?
Of the current available managers, I guess I don't really care. We can keep Sherwood.
The guys kind of took mine. I would want Frank De Boer, and something that I almost gave his real name away before the end of it. He said is that it doesn't work. The academy system doesn't really work outside of Ajax, and I agree with that. But to a certain extent, like maybe he could help to implement that system. And not, we know it's not going to work exactly the same. You know, our players aren't Dutch, and that's not that kind of rigidity built into the system yet. But I would kind of like to see that, because I do like seeing our youth playing, and it's something that A1 does talk about quite a bit. It's that we do actually have a lot of talent right now, to see them developed a little bit more. If it couldn't be him, man, I don't know. I feel like they're all a crapshoot. There's pluses and minuses with all of them, and nothing's a sure thing, and none of them you can look at them and say, like, that's a perfect fit. So I am a little worried about our situation with the manager right now.
How it's important
like any job or appointment, it's 50-50. Someone's going to work or someone's not going to work. I think that's the biggest thing. You just have to minimize your risk, but it's hard
but
to
we also have to
football more.
Yeah.
It also doesn't help that there's going to be a lot of managerial positions opening up this summer after the World Cup, and then now that United's slot is opening up, and then Wenger still hasn't signed an extension over at Arsenal, and who knows how long it's going to be before Chelsea fires their current manager. And then Newcastle, they should fire Pardew soon.
Like, can I change my answer to Pards? I want Pardew.
No, you can't. What? Because that's a horrible answer.
No, that's a great answer. I was thinking in the handsomest category and in that I absolutely want him in our locker room, jumping up into the crowd, hugging people and shoving linesmen.
So he and Baldini'd be the pair of silver foxes running things at Tottenham.
Damn yo. We do have one more question here. It's from my brother Blasian, giving a little family love. He has a question about the Tottenham Hotspurs. Like, and it's especially for you, Cry. Is Spurs the only thing Cry cries about?
No, it is not. I cry about Winthrop basketball, Penn State football, and right now there's some other things that are making me cry, but that's about it. That's all that really makes me cry. And then whenever Brooks is happy, I cry because I hate to see her happy.
Yeah.
That's totally sexist.
Well, I am also a lot of anti-things.
Matter?
Anti-matter? Yeah. Anti-hero? He's an anti-hero?
I am a treasure, but I am an anti-hero.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like the Winter Soldier, if you will.
I don't know what that means.
Who's watched the if you watched the movie, you would know.
We don't watch spoilers here.
I've watched it. I've read it. I know.
That's probably a Canadian character.
I'm on strike.
Is a Canadian character.
I don't want to talk about pop culture if we can't talk about Game of Thrones, but that's all right.
I don't know if you guys saw this on Monday, speaking of pop culture, but the Real Housewives of Atlanta reunion episode 1, there was some physical altercation. It was some really good shit. Everybody should go watch that.
The Real Housewives of what?
Of Atlanta.
Of Atlanta?
Yeah. Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah. You know what's actually the highest watch or the most watched housewife is Atlanta.
I didn't know that because I've never sought out that information.
I'm just letting you guys know. If we're going to talk about Game of Thrones and be all sexist about that, we got to give equal opportunity to Real Housewives of Atlanta.
That's fair. I think I don't want to talk about Game of Thrones bad enough to talk about Real Housewives of Atlanta.
All right.
So you got me there. You played the trump card.
God damn equality.
Yeah. Well, there's also, but guess what else has just debuted on Monday nights? The Boondocks Season 4.
Oh, The Boondocks is one of the funniest shows out there. I don't know if you guys are.
It's not. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Racial humor is awesome.
It is. It's awesome, but it's not. That show's not a good job of that.
Where the grandpa, like, comes up with the soul food restaurant, and he gives, like, the entire town the itis where they don't want to work, and it basically turns this, like, really nice area, like, people don't want to work anymore, so they start, like, robbing people just so they can eat all the food, and it's, like, this. So,
God, it's such great satire. I should tell folks that we are doing everything we can to not talk about Stoke. If you haven't noticed by now, like, we're doing this on purpose because we just really don't want to talk about Stoke.
I'm stoked for the game.
Well,
of course
you are. Well,
Alanis Morissette's husband, do you have anything to say about pop culture or Stoke?
Pop culture or Stoke? Well, Stoke is still Stoke, even without Tony Pulis. Pop culture-wise, I know I watched Mad Men the other night and really liked it. And that's about it for me. I don't have cable, so I subsist.
Do you guys know that they actually like might have their first ever top 10 finish in the Premier League this year?
Good for them. I actually
they're
like
that
Stoke.
High up in the table?
Yeah, man. They're not god awful. And ever since they got Odemwingie, they've been a little bit more dynamic. I mean, they still have Crouch. We all know what Crouch's game is.
I love Peter Crouch. So yeah. No one can besmirch Peter Crouch in front.
Like, I don't hate Peter Crouch because, you know, he's part of like one of the greatest years of the last, you know, recent history for Spurs. So there's no reason really to hate the guy. He's always got that, you know, oh, he's got good feet for a big man kind of thing. You know, he pops up, he scores goals. But they got Odemwingie. He's been, you know, Odemwingie looks to score. But they have a couple other nice players, and they're playing it on the floor a little bit more than they usually do. But I would say, and I think a lot of people know about the guy, but Nzonzi has actually turned himself into a decent player, Steven Nzonzi, coming out of midfield. They do have a couple other players, and I know that we'll have some Americans here that want to know about Jeff Cameron. Yeah, he does play, and he actually – what's that? You don't want to know about Jeff Cameron?
I like Ryan Shawcross.
I don't care about him.
You don't care about Jeff Cameron at all?
I don't care about Geoff Cameron, really.
He scored a nice goal a couple weeks ago, and he actually looks like he's coming into his own under Mark Hughes a little bit more, but I don't know. But, you know, they got a good goalkeeper, so.
Where are they playing him? Are they playing him on the right goal, like in the right defense or on the wing?
They were playing him at right back. Yeah.
I will say this about the Stoke game. I mean, I don't think he can really make any conclusions because the team... Tim Sherwood team. So there's no defensive plan, which we at least kind of had an idea of under ABB. There's no offensive plan really that much, which we didn't have under ABB. So it's kind of just, Tim's been dealt a rough hand and whatever, but he doesn't really have it. So that's the thing. I can't really look at games that come up now for the rest of the season and make a prediction of it because it's just, we could beat a team 3-1 or 5-1.
Well, do you think that, these like last couple of matches, should we just focus more on next year and like start playing like some either our youth players or players that are on the fringes, so we can like probably sell them in the close season?
Yeah, I would like that a lot, actually. If you know, we started to experiment, if Tim Sherwood felt like, okay, I can experiment with things instead of doing scorched earth routine that he seems to be on at the moment, like why not just, you know, make the best of a bad situation.
Or is he doing that now already? Like, we're going to sell Eriksen, we're going to sell Lennon, we're going to sell Adebayor, we're going to sell Kane.
I actually was going to answer this a little bit differently and say, no, we absolutely shouldn't be doing experiments. We should try to get as many goals as possible because our goal difference is stupid, and I at least like it to be positive. But then I realized, I don't think we could score enough goals in the next couple games that if we're tied on points with anybody for qualifying for Europa, that we're going to win on goal difference. So I agree with my dear friend, Kids in the Hall. I think that, I think he's right.
Okay, there's like a bunch of kids in the hall, you know. I could be Dave Foley.
Dave Foley, like definitely. He's my favorite character from Dick. Another great movie, speaking of. But I think that actually, back to Stoke here, I think that they get a really bad rap. I think that they were a great team to watch last year. I think they're a good team to watch this year. I say the same thing about Sunderland every year. But the thing about Stoke is they work their asses off, especially TP's Stoke. It's a little bit different under Hughes is definitely true. But I love watching Stoke. They're so fun. They're just so fun to watch. And anybody that disagrees with me is probably wrong.
Nobody cares about fucking Stoke. Nobody cares about this season anymore. Let's just get the season over with. Let's go to the World Cup. I want my Spurs back.
Oh my God, you are getting fired. We again are taking applications.
So, I think we should wrap it up now, head home. Well, thank you again, everybody, for another awesome edition. Bricks, any final thoughts?
I hope Stoke finish in the top half of the table. I hope Villa don't get relegated. And I hope we sell Lewis Holtby.
Yeah, thank you. 55th?
Well, I hope that I don't watch this game this week in a haze of medicine and fever like I did last week. I wasn't sure if I was really watching a terrible match for the first 30 minutes or if it was like a hallucination. So then I had my...
420 was the next day, sir.
Yeah, well, no, I was super sick. I don't know if people can tell that I'm super sick right now. But yeah, that too. But also, hey, do you think it's safe to reveal who our podcast, air quotes, mate is today?
Bruce McCullough.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the charade's gone on long enough. Maybe we should actually tell people who he is.
All right, Drake, what do you got for us?
Started from the bottom. Now we're still at the bottom.
Yeah.
Under Tim Sherwood. But no, it's been a pleasure having me. You guys have me on here. It's been a lot of fun. You can find me on the Twitters at William McQuaid. I do not operate under anonymity. I'm out there. I exist. And I'm also known on Cardinals Free Captain, if you frequent that site, as Willman.
Willman!
He's out there.
Thank you, Willman. Thank you, 55th. Thank you, Bricks. And on behalf of everybody, thank you guys for listening. Come on, you Spurs. Fire Tim Sherwood.